Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli, CEO of Cedar Gold, with our senior advisor, Alejandro Tagliavini. Today we have a very special, interesting show for you. It's on sports and sustainability with a focus on polo. Especially in today's COVID world, there's considerable emphasis on sustainability in all aspects of life and in the economy. And we're going to explore this in more detail with some very special guests. And here now to introduce our guest is Alejandro.
Hi, how are you? Well, today we have Brett Mannix, who is the best polo player in Canadian history and the patron of La Alegría, which is a very important polo team. It made it to the final of the Argentine Open some years ago. That means that at that time it was the second team in the world. So he made a great job with this team, La Alegría, as I say. Then we have Pierre Genocan, who is president of the Stadt Polo Club, and he's a member of the committee of the International Polo Federation, Federación Internacional de Polo, FIP. And we have Baron Richard Rasche Wartenberg. He's the president of the most beautiful Aver Schoff Castle Polo Club. I had the chance to be there like 3 or 4 years ago, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place, one of the most beautiful polo clubs I've seen. And also, I believe you are president of the Austrian Polo Association.
Yes, that's
right. Right, okay. So let's begin with Fred. Fred, yeah. Can you tell us how did you begin to play polo? How did you get to love polo and get involved in polo?
Well, Alejandro, thanks a lot for having me on here today. And I'm actually gone full circle. I'm here in Palm Springs, California, where we have the El Dorado Polo Club, where I actually learned how to play polo in the early 90s. It was set up every Saturday and Sunday. We had access to the top professionals, and we would play at 9 a.m. a PV polo program. And really from there, I've developed some of my lifelong friends and obviously the skills to play us at the highest level. And it was really through the dedicated efforts of most of the fathers, but some USPA involvement for sure along the way that provided a safe environment for us to get out there and have a great time and you know, obviously improve our skills on the polo field and our horsemanship. But I also have great friends that came from those encounters. So, you know, I feel quite blessed to be back all where it started.
All right. How did you get to found the La Alegría?
So Alegría was born out of a couple different points all converging at the same moment. And I went to Argentina to play the qualification for the Argentine Open with Colonel Suarez. So one of the most storied and famous polo teams ever to play the game. I was invited by the three Raya brothers, and we went to play the quali. I had a great time. Unfortunately, we didn't qualify, but what I saw was amazing facilities in polo in Argentina. The Open, the Hurlingham Open and the Argentine Open that year was incredible, and it became a fixation for me that one day I had to play it. And so as we were prospecting around in Buenos Aires looking for land, we did find some land, and we've set up a polo club there. And then it came time to name that farm. And a mare that had been sold by Juanchi Lagos to my father, named Alegría, came to mind because she was a beauty, and it was one of my dad's favorite horses. So we thought it was quite appropriate to name the farm after Alegría. And for those who are not Spanish-speaking, Alegría means happiness in Spanish. So appropriate all around.
Yeah, and you are also a breeder, right?
We are breeding a lot of horses. We're doing about like 60 embryos a year, and we're seeing a lot of success. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. every year, we're generating, new prospects that are coming, into my string, into my brother's string. And then we're selling in the market. Obviously last year, 2020, very strange year. So we didn't have our annual remate where we sell 2 and 3 year old horses, right. But it'd been a fixed year of the Argentine season for the past 5 years and, well received by the market, simply because we are seeing success on the field. And I'm quite proud of the organization and the people that we brought along to give us a hand with all those efforts that come into training horses.
Yeah. How about the facilities in Canada? I've never heard about polo clubs in Canada. And do you have any good facilities for polo in Canada or what?
We do have some amazing facilities, but you know, we're really hampered by the weather. So as you can imagine, 6 months a year, there's no polo anywhere in Canada. It's just too cold. But the other 6 months, we have some very passionate polo enthusiasts, specifically in Calgary. We have 7 polo fields there with a great clubhouse. And in Toronto, there's also quite a few, clubs and private facilities there as well. And then Canada being, you know, geographically very, expansive and diverse. We have little clubs, regional clubs kind of all around. But the best facilities definitely lie in Calgary and in Toronto.
All right. Great.
Have the facilities changed, somewhat in the post COVID era? If so, how, like what type of conditions or provisions are in place now that's different from before?
Well, we had I'm on the board of directors of the Calgary Polo Club, and we had a major challenge in 2020 during the summer. I'm not going to lie. It was very, very close on budget. And as you can appreciate, you know, these are nonprofit organizations, and so they're unable to run a deficit. And we really relied on the community and the membership to step up and fund some holes in the budget, along with some assistance from the United States Polo Association. And it was a very challenging summer, but I think very rewarding at the same time, because everyone pitched together. Everyone realized that, you know, obviously our club was under stress, and it was a very strange year. And so to give you a small example, we started the season without any grooms. And so I was tacking up the horses in the, you know, beginning days of June, and I hadn't put the bandages or tied a tail in quite some time. But I can tell you what, you do that a few days in a row and you get up to speed quick. So, you know, having those little things that changed the dynamic, obviously by the end of the summer, things were improving a little bit more and we were able to get access to that, you know, required, labor to give us a hand. But the start was very, very shaky. And I think one of the things now that we, you know, everyone's adjusted and kind of found their ways, we're planning for the summer in 2021. We have much better lines of communication and rules and guidelines on how people can enter the country and work, because obviously horses require attention on a daily basis. So feeling better positioned this year, that's for sure.
All right. Yeah, great. Okay, Pierre, how did you get involved in polo? How did you come to love polo?
It's a small and long story, because I was a show jumper and I was organizing the World Cup show jumping in Geneva during 18 years, and I run the show, and then I start with the polo 20 years ago, and I continue to organize the Polo Club Gstaad. The Polo Club Star, I am president since 14 years, and we play every August in the mountain, in the middle of the airport of Gstaad. And I live between Geneva, Gstaad, and Argentina, and Punta del Este. And I breed some horses. I breed some horses in Argentina, in Entre Rios, and I play polo now in Pilara, and normally in my campo in Entre Rios, I belong also to the marketing committee of the FIP, and I try to improve the polo in Switzerland, because in Switzerland we start the polo around 25 years ago, and we have in Switzerland 9 clubs and 167 players. It's a small world, but we improve every year, and for example, for my tournament, we can play 14 handicap. It's quite normal for Switzerland. And you have St. Moritz on the snow, and you have Zurich too. But the level grow every year.
All right. And at your club, the most important tournament is played, right? The Hulot Club.
My main sponsor is Hublot. Everybody hope to come to Gstaad because the prizes are for Hublot. If you can win a Hublot for a tournament, we have a lot of team. But we play just with the four team because we are on the mountains and we play on the middle of the airport. That means we have no horses, no club, but we just have the tournament during one weekend. Last year we canceled it because of the COVID, and for this year in August we work a lot now because we have one plan A, one plan B. We don't know if we can have a lot of spectators or no spectators and so on. This year it's horrible, it's very complicated, but our sponsors follow us. And we already have 6 teams registered for 4 places. And that means we are happy today. And but until now, we don't know if we can play the tournament or not. It's too early. I think before June, I am afraid to prepare everything. And I receive an order from the Swiss Confédération Suisse. They said, "Oh, you can't do your tournament because the COVID is again here." That means if I have to cancel it 1 month or 2 weeks before, or for example, we have one team is coming from Italy. If the customs are closed, we can't have horses from Italy. It's very, very complicated now. But I am very optimistic, and I think we will do that.
Okay, so your main sponsor is Hublot, right?
Hublot, the Gstaad Palace, Ferrari, Clinique La Prairie. I keep all the main sponsor of the main level as possible. We have a Swiss bank too, and we have not so many sponsors. I have a budget just for this tournament from 1.1 million Swiss US dollar. It's quite a lot.
All right, quite a lot. You said that something about the prices. I didn't understand.
No, because normally in a normal polo tournament, you don't have prize money. You receive a bag from La Martina with a bottle of champagne. But in our tournament, the winner receive one Hublot watch, 25,000 Swiss francs. That means I have the prize money for a Hublot watch. That's why we have already 6 teams registered.
All right.
Hublot watch.
Yeah, right. So, Richard, tell us, how did you get involved in polo and how did you get to love polo?
Well, it's amazing.
You have a beautiful club, let me tell. I was there about 4 or 5 years ago, and one of the most beautiful clubs I ever seen. Castle.
Don't make me blush, but I must say I like my own land and my own outlet here and the premises, and it's an old family which I turned into polo field, partially part of it, but we already been engaged in, as I, my colleague and Pierre Genesson just said it, he started as a show job for me too. At the beginning also in Switzerland, being a similar development, there was no polo before. In olden days maybe, but not since the Second World War. Here we had it before the war, and then it was all wiped out due to the war events. And we started as a young man, I had nothing, no alternative. I went into show jumping. I was a member of our national 3-day eventing teams for many years. We organized all sorts of tournaments, driving teams, etc. on my land. So I was with equestrian activity since my childhood. But then I knew there was one wonderful sport which I had not access to yet. And this was 30 years ago. As a matter of fact, a year before, 31 years ago, I went to look around. Where could I watch and see polo? I went to England. I went to the neighboring countries, but in particular, I went to Argentina. And that was an eye-opener and an eye-catcher. And eventually, I decided, let's go ahead. And it had to be really done from scratch here. I had to break the field. There was absolutely nothing here and nobody else around who could give me advice, local advice. So I had to shop around, go far away and meet people. And eventually I did it. And I decided to go ahead and we set up our club exactly 30 years ago. I hope I can celebrate these 30 years in the course of this season. We don't know about the COVID restrictions, but I'm still positive about it. And so we went on and on. At the beginning, it was absolutely, Greenhorn, Lolo, Polo, and we developed into a higher level. We had some very good pros who came over, most of them from Argentina. Also, one came from Ireland. And by and large, we've been influenced and educated and trained by Argentine experts. I had a very long-lasting club manager or head pro. His name was Esteban Panelo. He was a 9-goaler, had a very bad accident. I think he had a very almost fatal accident during a tournament in the U.S. and couldn't go on, couldn't pursue his high polo career. But then he was a highly educated polo player, and he spent more than 7 years with us. And he had a nephew who came as a young man to play with us, to give you an idea how we learned it. And by learning, by doing, by watching. And the nephew is well known to you and everybody in the world, is Paulito Pérez. He started, he had 3 goals, 4 goals, and within 2 years it was 6 goals, and then he didn't come back again because he was getting too high leveled. So we had others, but these were the beautiful experiences. We developed into tournaments. We had a very long-lasting, generous sponsor. It was the Saal Oppenheim Bank. The bank, unfortunately, went bust. This was in the time of the financial crisis. And so we lost our major sponsor, who was really very, very generous. And we had members from FIP who came here during the time of sponsorship. Patrick Guérin-Hermès was here. And we must say we were very happy with that very generous sponsor. And after that, it had a financial crisis. ISIS had slowed down the sponsor generosity substantially. But we went on with our major tournament, which is the Austrian Open, where we have various sponsors over the years. But in between, our highest achievement was the European Championship in 2010, where we had 10 nations on board. And that was quite an endeavor because we really had to make a lot of effort, and we got some, I must say, we got some very good credits for that. So this was one of our highlights. And now we are indeed slowed down, as almost everybody, due to this corona crisis. I don't know how many members we will get teams we're going to get this year, because what Pierre said before, we don't even know whether they get access, get over the frontiers and come here. So it's all very shaky, but we are positive.
All right. All right. Speaking about Paulito Pérez, he played with you, Freddy, didn't he?
Yeah, what a great season that was in 2013.
The final at Palermo, right?
Yeah, we had a magical year. We started the year 2013 with kind of medium expectations. I think we were rated 34 goals. Or maybe 32 goals. And, we knew right away we had a magical team because Paulito played unreal that season. I remember the first team meeting, we all went there and we said, man, we got to get Paulito the ball. And Hilario Joe nodded his head saying, yeah, we got to get Paulito the ball. And then we spoke with Lucas and Lucas said, we got to get Paulito the ball. And I said the same. And you could just see Paulito's chest expanding and he's like, oh, I think that's a great plan. And so that's how we played for the whole season. Just whenever we got the ball, pass it back to Paulito. And he had an incredible open. I mean, the team performed well. We beat Elerstina in the semifinals. And we had a great 6 chuckers against La Delfina. We ran out a little bit of horses, the last 2 chuckers. And I think we were a little bit green to win that match. But Paulito, champion in every regard and an excellent teammate.
Yeah, I saw that match. I saw the final. I was there at Palermo. For those who are not familiar with polo, the final, the Argentine Open is the most important championship in the world. So making it to the final means that you are the second best polo team in the world. And that was La Alegría at that time. Great, great job indeed.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. I got to say, a lot of support from my back home in Canada. A lot of people came down. Obviously, my family was there. And I still feel proud of reaching that milestone.
Yeah, great. And how about the Argentine Open has a particularity that it's not, there are no sponsors for the teams. Our sponsors are not the, I mean, the main financing of the tournament is made by the patrons of the teams, not by the sponsors, no? So it's hard to finance it.
We do have some corporate sponsors involved, but not to the level that have been described elsewhere in the world. As everyone can probably appreciate, Argentina has its own challenges around monetizing maybe some of those opportunities. So I think, the platform right now for the Argentine Open for sponsors to participate is a bit challenging. So the burden is really left up to the players, and it's a tremendous sacrifice that the players make every year to become well-mounted and keep the horses in training and keep on breeding. And, as we know, it's always a fine balance between winning and losing. And so having the corporate sponsor behind you, providing some capital that's required to become well-organized is critical if you can, grab that for the team.
Yeah. One of the things I love more of polo is the green life of polo. I mean, the fields are green, and everything is so green. It's completely different to football that's played on stadiums, which are mostly concrete, you know, like,
definitely. And that's one of the attractions, you know, to the lifestyle as well. So we've seen, the incorporation of polo fields into housing complexes, be very successful, whether you're talking about a Casa de Campo in Dominican Republic, in Spain, in Florida, Argentina. So it's a system that's worked well, and people want to be near the polo, even if they're not directly participating.
Right. Yeah, because the landscape is beautiful in almost every polo field in the world, you know, except Palermo, which is in the middle of the city.
Yeah, but, you know, Palermo's got that unique character to it as well. I mean, sure. We're a very tiny sport, so to have a facility like Palermo, we should all, celebrate that we have that in its current form.
Yeah, there is another polo field in the middle of the city, I mean, the middle of a big city, which is in Paris, the Polo Bagatelle, you know. That's the only, well, there's one in Chile also, San Cristobal, it's in the middle of the city too, the San Cristobal Polo Club in Santiago de Chile is in the middle of the city too. But still, it's pretty green and stuff. And Pierre, you don't have facilities in the Stad Polo Club, do you? You played in the airport.
We play in the airport on the August because we have snow in. We are like in Canada. We have snow until May, April, May. Right. Then we have to repair the field because with the ice and so on, we have to take a laser and so on and to prepare the field. We have to put sand and everything, and we prepare our field just for a weekend for 8 matches. It's completely crazy, but it's funny. The altitude is 1,200 meters, and you are on the middle of the mountain. And for example, a lot of our sponsors arrive with their private planes. They land and they walk and they are on the field. We don't need to have a limousine and so on. You can just catch your flight you can have all the facilities around the field.
And Pierre, in this time, like in the post-COVID era, are there provisions for helping, like the fans and spectators to view, like anything special or particular in that regard?
About the restriction now, in our tournament, we have first of all the VIPs. All the VIPs arrive from the clients, from Hublot, Ferrari, and so on. And we have a small tent, or even the big tent like before, we don't know. And for the normal public, we don't know if we are allowed to have spectators or not. But all our spectators, it's a free entrance. For us, it's not a problem. If we don't have spectators, or if we have spectators, for us doesn't matter. But we have a lot of TV, we have a lot of medias, and everybody can follow our tournament on the TV or YouTube or all the medias.
Oh, great.
But for us, the question is how many spectators or VIP can we have? We have, for example, a small village with the exhibition stands and so on. We don't know now if we are allowed to have people walking in the stands to buy things and so on or not. It's for an organizer, it's very difficult. We have tomorrow again a Zoom with all my committee, but until now we try to do our best, but we don't know in August how the COVID, if we are all with the vaccine or not, we don't know.
Okay. And Richard, how about yourself in terms of the way you play or the locations, clubs, for the spectators?
Well, it's a similar situation as what we've just been hearing from our Swiss friend, Pierre Genenat. We have the restrictions, and we don't know yet when they're going to be loosened. Now, usually we have a fairly large marquee on the pitch next to the field where we have the finals. We have two fields, as a matter of fact. Our club used to have three, but one was not so good, and it was always flooded, so we gave it up. And two is enough because we want to have two fields in good shape instead of have a third, which was not so good. So anyhow, these two fields, we have the finals on the one field, and there we have the marquee just in front of the castle, and people like to have this ambiente, I was told, lifestyle. It is part of lifestyle. On the other hand, we have to be careful. We have to, what also was said before, from what I was being told now by Gstaad, we have no, it's free entrance for the public at large. Only the VIP sector, it's normal. This is reserved for the guests. Now, this year, we don't know how many VIPs will be, whether we need to have to keep a certain distance between the tables. This will, well, we will wait. We wait till early April, then we will know. Then we have to make a final decision. And we, whether we keep the rest open to the public is also not to be answered right now. But I think it's important that polo is not only exclusive. We have to give it's access to normal people, and therefore we always try. I keep all my gates, which are not always open. We have an old enclosed park area, and we all open it ostentatiously for polo, so people have the feeling they have open entrance. And sometimes it helps, but you know, some people will never enjoy it, some people will not understand it. But there is a growing community, I must say. Over the years, we managed to keep, to improve the interest for people who had not been educated about polo, had no access to it before. So this is one of our endeavors. Also for the tournaments which we organize, not only for the players, to give them good play, good quality, good service, etc., but also for the public at large. Come and watch this wonderful game, which after all has been around our globe for 2,500 years. So,
great. And your thoughts, Fred, in terms of the same, like for spectators and inclusivity? Yeah.
Well, I think, polo has its own challenges around whatever people may think of it. So I think it's up to every member club really to create that welcoming and warm atmosphere. Obviously, we're in, very unprecedented times, but you know, what I'm seeing around, say, the golf and the tennis that's happening here in the United States is, you know, if things are done logically and in an orderly fashion, then I think people should be able to enjoy these events because they are outside and there is going to be availability for social distancing and those sorts of things. So when I'm looking ahead to the summer of 2021, I think the clubs would be well served to think about how to incorporate rules and regulations where everyone can first feel safe and then to keep the energy going, because a lot of people have expended incredible amounts of energy and resources to build the clubs to the current state, and it would be a travesty to let that energy be come and wasted. So let's keep on marching forward together if we possibly can.
Okay, great.
The problem of the COVID is not only for spectators. It's also for the horses, because with the customs, because, for example, Switzerland don't belong to Europe. That means we have a customs for everything. You spend hours and hours in the custs with all the paper for the horses. And if they cancel, they close the customs, you don't have any more horses. I can tell you a small short story about that. 3 years ago, I had a Riva boat as a sponsor. Okay. And Riva said to me, I will send a boat to Gstaad, for the exhibition stand. And, we were waiting the lorry. They stopped the lorry at the custom because they say no lake in Gstaad, no water in Gstaad. That's why at midnight we received the authorization to cross the, I spoke with the direction of the customs and so on, please give me the permission to enter. Switzerland is very complicated, very small, but very complicated to organize something.
Wow. Can I add something to the Riva boat story?
Yeah.
Riva as a sponsor, this is about 10 years ago. And we don't have a lake, but we have a moat. It's a medieval house. And the problem was also the authorities were very questioned me whether that would be safe to enter this boat into a moat, you know, a big crane, etc. So there it was more a security problem of the authorities. In your case, it was the custom. But anyhow, we had our problems, but Riva was attractive.
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, you know, I love Gstaad. I go there every winter, but I've never been here in summer. I enjoy it very much in winter. There's a lot of people there, a lot of friends. I enjoy very much the Gstaad Palace, which is a very beautiful hotel. I enjoy Gringo, which is the disco, the only disco really in Gstaad.
But now the Gringo is closed.
I
am a member of the board of Gstaad Palace. I can tell you a lot about
really?
That.
Right.
But you are all welcome in Gstaad from 19 to 22 August if you wish. If you are free, you can arrive, Alejandro, with your private jet. You can land on the field and can fly back to Buenos Aires if you wish after.
All right. Now, so the Gstaad Palace is a sponsor of yours, right?
Yeah, one of our main sponsors here. Yeah.
And you not this year, but you used to make some parties there, right?
No. We make our party in the main tent on the middle of the field. Because right. the palace do the catering for the lunches, and we served during the weekend 1,500 lunches our main tent. But this year, it's impossible, I am sure. We will build a small tent with the possibility between 10 and 20 persons for each tent. And if we are allowed to have bigger, we can open the tent and so on. And about the party, we don't know if we do that on the stables or in the palace or I don't know where or nothing. For example, we have a big parade on the Friday in the village. It's good for the publicity for the tournament. I don't know if we are allowed to do that this year. We have so many questions and no answers. And for me, I have to decide at the end of April, because after I start to lose money, I have to put sand on my field. I have to, how can you make a contract with a sponsor? You say, yes, you have a stand. Okay. It's a price. No stand. It's impossible. And my budget is very important because all the players are all invited. No entry fee, no stable fee, no nothing. They are completely invited. And I wish to continue with this system, but I cross fingers, but I don't know now.
Right. And tell me, Gstaad is so crowded in summer as in winter, or is it less crowded?
No, it's the same.
The same?
Yes. We have a lot of people at the end of the season because we have the Rosé College, very well, famous college. And it's completely full. The week of the polo, Gstaad is sold out completely because we have in the same time the Yehudi Menuhin Festival for the music. That means people are going to see the match on the afternoon and at night they go to the concert.
All right.
It's a very big week.
All right. Great. You said you had a lot of TV and YouTube, and that's very important for the sponsors, right? Having that, a lot of media covering
Last year we had 62 medias and 14 TV channel with the China to CCTV, Japan and everything. I have a very big budget just for the medias. We are very connecting worldwide. We with a lot of camera and so on. I try to do my best, but it's very important to improve the polo and to show how we can organize things.
Well, that's very important for the sponsors. I mean, to have such so much media.
And,
you know?
I do every time a small media conference with all the CEOs of our sponsors. On Saturday morning, I invite the sponsors of Hublot, okay, with a media conference. Then the Gstaad Palace, then the Clinique La Prairie, and so on. That means it's a general view also for the sponsor. They are happy. And I rent a very old horse and I put a journalist on the horse just to see how to handle with the taco just for 5 minutes. But they are so happy. They make photos and so on. We have huge medias in our organization.
All right. Yeah. And how about the medias in Austria? They are less, it's less popular, right?
Not exactly the same as in Switzerland. First of all, I mean, it's a celebrity in the sports area and everybody knows about it. That helps you and you have a first class hotel, not only the palace. I know Gstaad very well, Pierre. I was spending 2 winters there as a young boy in one of the internats, and I went back to Gstaad seeing his friends many, many times. So for me, it's very familiar what you say. I feel very much at home. But I don't have Gstaad here. I have a very small and unimportant municipality outside our own area here. So this is not an attraction I can boast of in vis-a-vis media. But what we have is Vienna. We have a first-class culture. We have first-class hotel business. Many of our friends over the years, members of the teams, stayed either in a local hotel or they went to the Sacher, which is one of our most prominent hotels. But they're all closed. We don't even know whether a modest one in the local area or the Sacher is going to be operating in June. Our major tournament is in June, not in Gstaad. Yours is in midsummer, but we are a bit earlier. So it's very, very squeezed this year. So I don't exactly know how it's going to develop. Since we keep on having new good and bad news, the variants are making us a lot of, causing us a lot of skepticism. And we are aware that it's not over yet, this terrible, stupid crisis, this pandemic. But so we have to adapt. In case we don't make it in the what we call the more official and grander style, we will do it in a modest way. That doesn't mean that polo is no good. Polo has to be the same quality. As a matter of fact, we are not Palermo. We cannot cope with Argentina. When I say we play medium goal, it's 6-4 and high is 8-12. We don't go much higher than that because then I have to leave the field open to our imported pros from most of them from Argentina. But since we want to play pro-am, we have to limit the level to a certain top level. So this is where we like to sort of render offers good quality. And I think we've managed quite well so far, but not much higher than that because we don't have the amount of horses, the quality of the horses, and neither our amateurs are not more than 0-2 at the most 3 handicap. Well, that's our present situation.
All right. And Freddie, what about Canada? All of those is not very popular, right? It's not very, you don't have many media is covering polo activities, do you?
No, we don't. It's not a popular sport really in Canada. I mean, we're dominated by winter during, obviously September through April. So hockey is tremendously popular. And then American football is also a very popular sport. But yeah, I think the summer sports don't really get as much media attention. However, we do work very diligently with the local media outlets to help raise the level and the profile of the Calgary Polo Club, where I had mentioned earlier that I am on the board of directors. So, you know, we really try and take a holistic approach, you know, at the grassroots level, trying to work with our neighbors and obviously be a good neighbor. And at the same time, you know, work with all the other pony clubs around town and the horse driving, and bring people who love horses and want to participate in that field, even if it's just as a spectator. So I think it takes a holistic approach when trying to get people interested. You know, if you're too focused on one area, maybe you're missing opportunities on another side. So I don't have the magic bullet. I would love for it to be on ESPN every Friday and Sunday night. I think we would all enjoy that. But the critical path and the blueprint is yet to be seen.
You don't have snow polo in Canada?
We have had some snow polo, but just kind of one-off events in Tremblant in Quebec. They've done quite a few years in a row an annual event. Obviously, not last year, but I mean, there has been some snow polo in Canada. Out in Calgary, we have Banff National Park. They've had a few exhibitions on the lake there by the Fairmont Hotel. So, you know, people are enthusiastic. It's not a question of, you know, want. I think it's more of a question of, like, can they tie it into an event that's marketable and makes sense for everyone involved.
But in Calgary, you play in Spruce Meadow or in other field?
So Spruce Meadows is the world-class jumping facility where they have the Masters every September. There, about 20 minutes, is the Calgary Polo Club, where it has 7 fields and a clubhouse. Amazing facility. It's really a world-class facility.
I am very close with the Southern family. I went very often in Spruce Meadows for the show jumping because I was president from Geneva Show Jumping. That's why. I am more show jumper than I was show jumper during 40 years in national level and polo play, very bad polo player, handicap 0. I start with -2. But for the patron, it's very easy. You play number one, and you are waiting for the ball. Okay, and all the best are behind you. And I played one match in my life, Conchados in Palermo, but
nice.
It was on the trot, just to say, oh, I was in Palermo. No, but polo for me, it's a dream. When you are too old for the show jumping, you can start for the polo. It's my point. I am 71 years old, but I play every day, and I am completely a fanatic of polo. That's why I try to keep the sport in Switzerland. But the problem in worldwide is it's to find the sponsors. And to find the sponsors, for example, at the FIP, it's very difficult because the FIP is neutral. The FIP organized all the polo world, but they don't own a tournament and so on. And it's difficult for a FIP to find a worldwide sponsor. Because if you arrive, for example, with the FIP, with Hublot, and you have in Austria Rolex, it's impossible. You can't play. You have to find a sponsor neutral and so on. And we need also to have the help of the players. It was the same problem in the jumping. In jumping, all the riders 20 years ago, they jumped and then they go to have a beer and they go back to the hotel without boots and so on. Sponsors, nothing to do with them. And it's a little bit like that in Europe. I said to my guys, please go to see the sponsor, to have a drink with the sponsor, to explain your life and to be well dressed and so on. After you can go on the stables. But we have to explain that. And if you have a nice player, a good player, well educated and speaking with the sponsor, it's perfect. But it's not the case very often, and nobody educate. The same problem was in jumping. I am a little bit tough, but it's the situation.
Well, Pierre, if you need someone to go over there and help you with the sponsors and, you know, talk intelligently to them, I have my hand up here.
Welcome. Right, welcome. No, but
thank you. And I know it's genuine, so I appreciate that invitation.
No,
you're
you are
a good
are.
Man. Thank you.
You are quite an exception, and but in Europe it's not so easy to find. when the level is very high, it's easier than when the level is very low. Because in Switzerland, a lot of players, they have two or three horses. They spend more time to bridle the horse than to play. And the competition is not we have to give some power. And I try to do that in my country, my small country. But I probably in Austria, it's much, much better organized. But in Switzerland, it's not so easy.
What about internationally? Are there like tournaments or competition globally, like maybe even with the Middle East? I think Paul is originally from Persia. And have you been there in the Middle East for tournaments? Anybody?
Whom are you asking now?
Anybody, yeah, anybody.
Well, I can, Middle East, no, I watched games in Dubai. I didn't play. I had friends who played and they asked me to join in as well. And I was playing in Thailand at some friends who has a very beautiful polo club. This well-known man, Harald Link, who also played the Open in England years ago. He said that was a unique experience. He's much too low in his handicap level, but he managed to organize a team for himself. But he had a wonderful club in Thailand, so I had a nice tournament there. And I have the young Indian Maharaj of Jaipur came to play with us last year, and he invited me, but I said, no, I'm too old. I send you my grandson who is 20 years of age, plays very well, and he's going to go there. So I haven't been, I've seen it, but I haven't been playing. So you can't do everything. But I see it's a universal community, Paul. And that is, we can hear it now. We listen to each other. Each of us has a different approach to Paul. And yet there's a lot of common grounds. And that's around the globe like that. So I think we have to keep this game flying high. But if you are not one of the grandees, like our friend who's just been explaining us his career in polo, playing at the Open in Palermo, it's not everybody's match. Most of us who are involved in polo have never a chance to participate because we are not these top-notch players. But we can watch it and see it. But on the other hand, if I want to induce the young players to play, they must also have the chance to see what high level means. And sometimes we manage to give evidence of this quality in our clubs, but not so often because the everyday life is what my predecessor Pierre just said. People are spending a lot of time with polo, around polo, with horses. They do their brushing of the horses. They spend a lot of time in the stable. They discuss, I don't know what sort of strategic aspects of rules and regulations. Not always having enough empathy and, how should I say, commitment to the game.
I went once in Beijing, and I arrived in Beijing to the club, and I thought the polo field in Beijing, it's a potato field. It's impossible to play with avec le brouillard and so on. And we arrive, perfect field. Really? We arrive in the middle of the match. Yeah. The owner go down of his, stop the match, go down of the horse, say hello to us and so on. And the clubhouse was with an hotel than more than 100 rooms, full of sponsors. Oh. And at night I was invited to his house. It was the son of the finance minister from Beijing, Xi Lailiu. Okay. And he said to me, oh, come, I live in the Forbidden City. We have a dinner together. Okay, 5 hours on the table. Okay, and at middle of the night, he said to me, "Oh, we go up the Forbidden City. I will show you the view of Beijing. We walk 150 steps. We arrive like that on the top." And he took his phone. He ring somebody, and he put the light of all the Forbidden City just for us. Okay. Yeah. In the middle of the night. Okay. And after I check in and I say, you are invited to Gstaad. And he came to Gstaad with his team. And he was walking in Gstaad in the street. And he asked me about the palace this castle, which is the name of the prince of the castle?
Well,
and that's why, sorry.
Owner would be very happy to be considered the prince of the castle, of the palace. What's our old, is much old, who is the owner now? Is it already, is still old, Mr.
Schertz? It's Andreas, yes. Schertz, the fifth still, generation.
Yes, fifth generation. Is he still active?
Yeah, yeah, completely. Andrea is 52 years old, and the father is still every day. The father is still every day. Ernest is still every day in the hotel. Yeah, yeah.
So he's the prince of this castle of Chad, I think. Right. But you know, when you see this, you ask yourself, are we in the wrong place when you see these Chinese? I had the owner of this Gold Jean company. As a matter of fact, they got together with the FIP top manager, top president and vice president here at my place in 2010, and became the biggest sponsor of FIP for a couple of years. Then it stopped. Goldin, you remember Pierre? You remember the name of this Chinese tycoon who was financing FIP for a couple of years?
I don't remember the name.
Yeah, well, he came here. He saw it. He went to Argentina, he signed the deal for 3 or 4 years, then it was over. And the budget of FIP was inflated like, five times the normality due to this Chinese infusion. But then it went over again. He made a whole city in Chongqing of himself with golf, with polo, with, top style urbanizations and so. I never met him again, but it was just, he came with his private jet with 10 of his assistants, saw Polo here, watched it for 2 days during his European Championship, didn't speak a word to any of us. I invited him for dinner in the house. He was there with his whole crew. Ed was making a dig. Bauer disappeared, didn't speak to anybody. And after that, he contacted, who was at that time the president after Guérin. After Guérin, it was an Argentine president we had.
Ah, yeah, Colquhoun, Richard Colquhoun, I don't know.
It was 8, 9 years ago, I forget. So anyway, they signed the deal and made Pip quite happy for a couple of years, but then I think it stopped.
So the problem with Argentina is to catch sponsors, because the economic situation, for example, before you had Rolex, okay, during a long period, but yeah. With the economic crisis, Rolex stopped. Then yeah. you had Hublot, and Hublot they closed the shop and so on. And they are okay to come to Argentina, but they need to have a reciprocity about the clients and so on. And now it's difficult with the situation.
Argentina has always been difficult, but right now they're even more difficult. But it's the home heartland of Polo. We have to pray for Argentina in order to keep Polo in Argentina as high as it is.
I was on the board of HSBC during 10 years, and with HSBC we came to Palermo, and we are still in Palermo. I am no more involved with them, but HSBC is still and Volkswagen, but that's it. To ask a watchmaker, it's very difficult. It's already difficult in Europe, but for the players play with the watchmakers, Richard Mille and a lot, but it's individual sponsorship. It's not a sponsorship for a tournament. And that's why it's difficult even for Argentina and also for the FIP.
Yeah. All right. Now, Fred, not having so many so many media in Canada attending Polo, it's more difficult for you to get sponsor, right? Which is a pity, because it's such a nice sport, so green and so sociable.
Yeah, but it's not the main focus. I think most people in Canada, they want to, you know, if they're participating at the club level, they just want to play. They want to have a safe environment, and they want to have the fields in the best condition possible with, you know, professional umpires. So I see that the sponsorship is very, very accretive to the bottom line to the clubs because, you know, very little money is actually spent on the sponsorship package. And I'll give you an example. Like if you have somebody come in and say, I want to sponsor the day for $25,000, you throw up some signs, you make a table, you have a lunch, but generally most of that $25,000 flows straight to the club to help improve the club and keep things moving. So it's very important, but it's very hard to, for whoever is sponsoring, for them to qualify, like, was that a good idea? Did we get, you know, bang for our buck out of those marketing dollars? So what I've seen is generally, you know, these are passion projects that people generally want to be part of. And we had Land Rover, for example, 5 years as our sponsor in Argentina. And it was basically born out of a key management member saying, I want to be around the Polo. I want to, you know, I obviously have the brand having exposure in the Argentine market. And this makes a lot of sense. And I have the decision-making capabilities. So we're doing it. And it was a great partnership because we had everyone aligned and on board. And obviously, you know, they got great exposure, but getting that key man to decide that they want to participate is critical and a challenge, as everyone is aware of.
But what we have to change is our rules, because our rules are so complicated, nobody understand how it works. I spent 2 hours with members of the Olympic Committee in Palermo 2 years ago during the Youth Olympic Games, and I tried to explain to them our rules. We change after each goal and so on. It's impossible after half an hour. Okay, ciao, bye-bye. I go. No, it's already difficult for the player sometimes, okay? But we need to have a format. The format is very important for the TV because you can't have 8 chokers and 2.5 hours. It's not like a tennis, huh? But you have to find a program for 56 minutes with publicity. But with our sports, it's very difficult to if somebody fall down, you with the ambulance and so on. After each goal, you have to go in the middle. We have to simplify our rules because for the speaker, in Argentina, we have no speaker, they don't explain, okay? But in Europe, we have speaker, they explain all the rules, they speak, but after half an hour, they go to have a drink, ciao. They like to see horses when they are galloping very fast, but we have to help the media. And we create in Stade a small brochure with some rules, some basic rules, to help them to understand our sport. And I think we have a lot of things to do. Probably in Austria, they have the same problem, but it's a worldwide problem. It's so complicated.
Yeah, but it's not always easy to find a good qualified speaker for any small tournament. You cannot. First of all, they're not available. Secondly, it costs a lot of money. So we have an excellent speakeress. She's from New Zealand. We've had her for many years for our final days for the final weekend of our major tournament, the Austrian Open. She's an excellent woman. She explains it beautifully. But at the beginning, even that, and she speaks English, many did not follow, did not understand. And then we had to explain it in German again and so on. The usual thing is many people don't listen really. It's too complex. Yeah. And then you are a player. It takes a lifetime to understand it for oneself. It's always complex. And to transfer this, to explain it to the non-educated public, it's a hard business. It's never going to be quite easy because I don't believe in the easy rules. Maybe you can facilitate it a little bit, but it's complex. The sport is not that easy to explain.
Yeah, listen, unfortunately, we are running out of time because we are enjoying so much this chat. But as I say, we are running out of time. So anything else you want to say?
Just wanted to say thanks a lot for inviting me on. It's been a pleasure speaking with everyone who's so passionate about sports and polo in particular. So thanks for including me.
Thank you so much.
You are all invited in Stade, 19 to 22 August. Welcome. You know my mail. You are welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, whenever you come to Little Austria, when it's possible again, flights are going to land again, please don't miss having make a little detour. We only have an hour from downtown Vienna, and come and join us for one of our tournaments. Even without tournaments, you all could be our guests.
Would be. When are your dates? When are your dates in Austria? It's in August.
What?
Thank you, everyone. Unfortunately, I have to go, but I appreciate the chat today. It's been awesome.
Sorry, I didn't understand the
language. Thank you, Fred. Just
When is your tournament in Austria?
A series of tournaments we have we have amateur tournaments, and we have a series of four to six to eight tournaments, but the major tournament is always mid-June.
Mid-June, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can send you our detail, all our dates.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Okay. Richard Bonugli?
Yes. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. It's been great, great having you. A great time. We had some fun, and also just we emphasized the sustainability of polo, how it can bring meaning and impact to the world. We're big on sustainability and ESG in our firm, and we're very happy to have had you on this program. Thank you very much, Pierre and Richard and Fred.
Thank you all. Thank you all. And for me in particular, thank you, Alejandro, you are the one who got me on board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The
FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.